We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The college basketball season is done. Sunday it was Stanford earning the women's championship. One night later, Baylor cutting down the Nets on the men's side. Credit to those programs, an incredible accomplishment, and really to any team that pushed through this type of a season. Because let's face it, in most college basketball communities, Ann Arbor and the University of Michigan very much included, the sacrifices by these student athletes, coaches, and staff members help make everyone else's lives better. Because we all had some different sacrifices and challenges new to this pandemic in 2020 into 2021. I can tell you this, I know these Michigan basketball programs brightened a lot of my days. I really hope the same for you, even if the seasons didn't end with a victory. I do hope if and when each person who was in one of those programs reflects on this season, they understand, realize, and can grasp and appreciate the type of joy that their hard work, competition, and sacrifice brought to so many others. Yeah, most of the seats were empty or, you know, slightly strained by a cardboard cutout, but thousands were there in spirit, in Chrysler, in the state of Texas for the women's tournament, in the state of Indiana for the men's tournament. Heck, even on that plane when the women's team was coming home. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But that saying of, you know, don't be sad that it's over, be happy that it happened. Yeah, listen, I get if you want to subscribe to that, no doubt. I think there's something to be said for that this season for both programs. I also won't begrudge you for being disappointed with the close calls. Those opportunities don't come around automatically. But I don't think there's any doubt that these seasons will age well. And hopefully we won't have to lament being apart for the next go-around come November, because hopefully by then we can celebrate what happened in this crazy season and also what's to come in what promises to be a really exciting 2021 and 2022 for Michigan basketball. Great stuff here on the podcast today. Kim Barnes-Rico. We'll have a men's recap with Terry Mills right here on our first off-season edition of Defend the Block.
We're talking Michigan basketball. Welcome to Defend the Block, where we'll take you inside the basketball programs with interviews, analysis, and so much more. Now, here's your host, Brian Bush.
So glad you're coming along for the ride here in this offseason. This is where the work gets done. This is where you start to build that foundation for the coming season. What Baylor and what Stanford accomplished, that's what Michigan will be seeking to do. And it has already begun, as we'll hear from Kim Barnes-Rico, and we will catch up with some people in the men's program here as time goes along as well. Encourage you, subscribe, rate, review the podcast. Drop us a line. Let us know if there are certain interviews that you want to hear. We're going to try to get some former players, some certainly current members of the staff and team, stuff along those lines, as we all know, yeah, the games aren't happening, but this is a very busy time in college basketball, and we will keep you up to date on the latest for Michigan men's and women's basketball. In terms of the observations for what had transpired in the Final Four, We'll talk about it a little bit with Kim Barnes-Rico. On the women's side, I'll tell you, I can't remember the type of enthusiasm and excitement around the women's tournament. It's really exciting to see all the people understand, yeah, this is high-level basketball. I mean, if you watch that Michigan-Baylor game, if you watch any of the Final Four or the national championship game, I mean, that Stanford-Arizona game, which was a lopsided series during the regular season, went right down to the wire. Fascinating product. Good stuff. If you deliver good games that have meaning, it resonates with people, and I'm glad that that's happening. The women's stage was really bright during all this, and in a time where there have been some struggling ratings because of the pandemic, I think, the numbers were tremendous. This is a great opportunity for the sport to really capitalize on the women's side. In terms of the men's side, I mean, you had two games that were pretty lopsided, and then you had that Gonzaga-UCLA game, and, you know, I still think about those final handful of shots that Michigan missed against UCLA. I think about the Franz Wagner banker and just how agonizingly close this team was. But I will say, I never thought, oh, well, you got to take advantage because it's an 11 seed. That was not an 11 seed. And I don't know if it took people to see what they did against Alabama, what they did against Michigan, or what they almost did against Gonzaga. But that is a team that's now getting top 10 love going into next year. Obviously, you know, they'll, like all teams, have to figure out, okay, will Johnny Juzang come back? Will other things go the way that, you know, will benefit that program? But I never looked at it as what a missed opportunity because of the seed number in front of UCLA. That is a historic program. That is a group of really talented players. Mick Cronin did a tremendous job. So tip your cap to them, to Gonzaga, and obviously most emphatically to Baylor. They were the best team, and I know Gonzaga had a great run, and I admire so much about that program and where they've come from, but I think people forgot going into the tournament just how good Baylor was, and whether it was their COVID pause or whatever it might be, that team was the real deal, and they showed it because it was a lot of that conversation, Gonzaga and then Baylor, and then Baylor loses, kind of trips up a little bit, and you just put that Gonzaga team, understandably, on a pedestal, but it was Baylor on Monday night. Tip your cap to that program. Heck of a job. I mean, that Baylor basketball is not a powerhouse traditionally, so to be able to do that is pretty remarkable. So we will have plenty to talk about on both programs as we go along in the offseason. Wanted to do a deep dive with Kim Barnes-Rico heading into the offseason. We'll hope to do something similar with the men coming up next week. I do have, like we did with a lot of the post-game podcasts, my segments, in this case, from the UCLA game with Terry Mills. I did not put it out right after the game like I normally did because, well, I don't think a whole lot of us wanted to hear it at that point. But Terry and I will reflect on the season. We'll look ahead to next year, talk a little bit about that UCLA game itself. That is from our radio broadcast back on Tuesday night of last week. So hope you enjoyed that. But first, Kim Barnes-Rico on Michigan women's basketball, the reflection of a great season, talking about some of the staff changes with Toya Wilson heading to SMU to be the head coach. Congratulations to her. What she's working on now, discussing the very scary situation with their travel back from San Antonio with an emergency landing. She'll get into that a little bit, and we appreciate her thoughts. And, of course, reflecting on what was a special season. So Kim Barnes-Rico first, then we'll have my chat with Terry Mills just after that tough loss in the Elite Eight for Michigan men's basketball against UCLA. All of that here on Defend the Block. Great to be joined by the head coach of Michigan women's basketball, Kim Barnes-Rico. A little bit more than a week after the run ended in San Antonio, the college basketball season has ended for both sides. Coach, you've had some chance to reflect on what that was like. The emotions, I know, were so high and so low and so many times. Now, as you think back to the two wins and then the loss, what comes to mind? What do you think of when you think about all that?
You know, it still stings, if you could believe it or not. It really stings because it was a tough game. We felt super confident in that game. We really thought we were going to be successful. But just the way we played in the entire NCAA tournament, I thought we were composed. I thought we were confident. I thought we had a tremendous belief in each other. And it was kind of a reflection of the season and kind of the the perseverance that we had throughout the ups and downs of the COVID year. And just really proud of our team, proud of the way they responded to everything that was thrown their way this season.
I know you get right back into going to work. Obviously, you have an assistant coach opening and a whole lot that goes into it. For the players, how long did you see, did it take them, or and have they gotten to the point where it's gone from the disappointment of the loss to Baylor to the appreciation of accomplishing something that this program had never accomplished before?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's been a different kind of, you know, year. Obviously, we all know that, but it was a different return after the tournament as well. One, we had a little bit of flight issues, which caused for a little bit of a delay. But then upon returning, it was the first time in my career that most of our players went home or, you know, left. And typically you don't do that because you're in school. So typically you have a chance to, you know, go through the season and have your end of the year meetings and really evaluate and spend time together and have a banquet and do all the great things that come at the end of a great season like this. But because our student athletes since July, most of them, some of them even earlier, have been in a semi-bubble where they've been testing every single day since probably October. Every day they hadn't missed a test. So they really haven't been at home. They haven't seen their family. They haven't been away from this kind of bubble that we were in just to allow us the opportunity to compete. So for us, you know, I met briefly with some of them the next day, you know, just to say, hey, what are your plans? What do you want to do? What are you trying to do? Great season. But really didn't have the typical end of the year stuff that we normally do. There have been some kids that have stayed around, which is great. And they're, you know, Nas is coming up in a few minutes, popping her head in. There are some that are chomping at the bit to get back to working out. You know, you have those that never take a break. So it's been interesting, but each one of them has kind of had a different path upon return than our typical normal year.
We had conversations on the air and off the air about the frustrations, the challenges, the difficulties, the obstacles of this season. It's one thing, I think, to do it day by day when you're so locked in on the season. But when you did finally get home after that crazy flight situation, which I do want to ask you about, now that you know the whole story, you know the totality of the situation and everything you did, is there even more of an appreciation of what you, the staff, the players did? Because again, it's one thing to take it day by day, but when those days stack up and it's done, I mean, that's got to be such a unique way to look back at the season.
Definitely. And I think forever, you know, we're never going to forget this year forever in history. But I also think our team this year was really special. But women's basketball was really special. And what we went through at the NCAA tournament and how, you know, we talked about in March how, you know, we brought light to the George Floyd killing and, you know, social racial injustices and, you know, fighting for change. Well, you know, then we finished it almost a year later with not the same issues, but gender issues and, you know, gender biases and gender inequities, and they were brought to light in the NCAA tournament. And I thought, you know, that was really critical too. And that'll be something this last year has been so much, but I think it's going to just help us just continue to grow and continue to bring light to situations that were really, you know, wrong throughout, you know, the course of my lifetime, but even especially our student athletes. And just to see their response to that, I thought was pretty special. But from a basketball perspective, you know, I think forever, and you said it, you know, I'm going to reflect upon this year as, you know, just, you know, we broke so many barriers and we did so many things that people didn't, you know, weren't sure we could ever accomplish. And it started at the beginning with, you know, the 10-0 start and just handling all the twists and turns that were thrown our way. So the performance that they had in the NCAA tournament, which was absolutely incredible. I mean, you know, we started with the Florida Gulf Coast team that no one really picked us to win. They were, you know, won 26 games in a row, shot 1,000 threes on the year, one of the favorites, you know, to advance in the tournament, and played our butts off to beat them. And then to play Tennessee, like the tradition of Tennessee, and then to play the way we did in the Tennessee game, I just think we rallied, we continued to rally and gained confidence and gained belief. And then, you know, you face the former, you know, champions in Baylor, and, you know, we score a bucket to send it to overtime and then take a lead in overtime. So I just think there were so many things, you know, to reflect back on, but not even it showed to the rest of the world in a basketball game. But I think to us as a team, it showed in so many different ways, and just the resiliency, the perseverance, the ability to pivot, the ability to handle so many different things made us get closer and closer throughout the year. And you know, following our men and just being so close to our men, for us to be doing almost the same thing, almost, we didn't get that far, but at the same time, I think was really special to our university and to our programs as well.
What I hope that you and your players and Juwan Howard and his players and everybody associated with all of this is that all of you guys realize that the sacrifices you made had a real impact on other people, because I think a lot of people looked at your team, at Juwan Howard's team, and some of the others in this athletic department as an escape, as a way to try to forget about what has been a really tough year. Do you think your players grasped just how much their sacrifices helped make other people's sacrifices a little bit more bearable?
You know, Brian, that's a great point. And thank you for saying that, because it does, you know, make you feel like, wow, you know, you did put a smile on somebody's face. And so many people have reached out to us. So many alumni, so many people in the community. I mean, people all around the world. I mean, our kids go places now and people recognize them. And they tell me, Coach, this is the first time ever. Like, you know, we can't go out. And people like, oh, Nas. And not only Nas, but, you know, Danielle Roush is like, wow, everybody knows who I am. So I think that's really special. And that'll be something that I will remind them of, because they did sacrifice, and they, you know, they committed to this, but they did, you know, in a year where you couldn't really, you know, go out too much, or you couldn't leave your house, to have the opportunity to watch Michigan basketball, Michigan men's basketball, Michigan women's basketball perform on the biggest stage and represent our university and our university community the way we did was truly special. And I think that representation, you know, goes deeper than just the X's and O's, but our kids and, you know, the way they interact and their personalities, the way they connect with people, was so great for the Michigan community, both on the men's and women's side, and just such great representatives of our university to be what is a leader in best.
You mentioned the gender inequalities, and that obviously was frustrating. That was annoying. That was wrong. I will say, in a time where sports ratings have gone down across the board, because I think due to the challenges, I think people have to work more or do some extra things or aren't as excited about a certain game. I don't know if I ever remember a women's NCAA tournament that got as much coverage. And maybe that's just, hey, I'm wearing the Block M, Michigan goes to the Sweet 16. But I don't think that's just my individual maize and blue perception to it. I do think that this was a groundbreaking year for the sport as a whole. Did you sense that while you were in the bubble and after the fact watching? I don't know how much you watched. I know there was probably some anger and frustration in there. But it was such a great representation for this sport. There were so many great games down the stretch. And of course, I mean, Michigan-Baylor is right at the top of that list.
Yeah, great point, Brian. I think it was an unbelievable NCAA tournament. It was an unbelievable year for women's basketball players, for women athletes. I think it just drew so much attention to the issues, but really then drew that attention to watching the games. And the games were phenomenal from top to bottom. I mean, it was hard to turn off a game. And yeah, I was frustrated. Usually I get home from the tournament and don't even turn the television on. But then I allowed myself to become a fan because there were such great stories. And I think that's part of it, Brian, is you never really hear of the stories. I always wonder, you know, I watch The Journey all the time. And I always wonder, you know, on The Journey, you know, why are there never any women's stories? And why, you know, I mean, the stuff Naz Hillman, she has such a story, but we went through and we talked about it, you know, at the tournament, like every player in our program has their story and how they got here. And each one is unique and each one is special, but the same is true throughout the country. And just to hear these stories and then go out and watch the women perform the way that they did and watch every game be so competitive and sitting on the edge of your seat, like the men's semifinal game, Gonzaga, UCLA, it felt like that, but that was one that all the women's games were like that. You felt like that throughout the entire tournament. It was hard to turn it off. So I do think that, you know, the light that was brought to the issues that we were going through really made maybe people turn on the television and watch some of the product. And the product was outstanding. And I hope it's going to draw more people to that, to the game, because it was fun. It was exciting. It's easy to be a fan. They connect with people. I mean, when you get to know Naz, you want to follow her and you want to root for her and you want to cheer for her. And I feel like we have, you know, 14 people in our program that are like that. And hopefully the country was able to see that on the national stage and playing some of those games on ABC. Our game was on ABC. You know, there have been so many alumni throughout the country that have reached out or even came to our games in San Antonio. And that's typical on the men's side, but that usually doesn't happen on the women's side. But I also think it's, you know, people like Juwan and the men's team that, you know, sent those messages and went on social media in support and asked the women to comment on different things. I mean, I think our players and the relationship they have with the men here and the men's players here and the relationship that we have with the men's coaches staff, I think it's really important to move the needle and to move the women's game forward. But great point. I think the tournament was outstanding and I think it's really going to help us be, you know, I think it was eye opening to the rest of the world and it's going to help us moving forward.
No, it was high level stuff and it was cool to see and hear your team. I love Naz obviously, but you know what? You had three games out there. Other stories got to be told. She's obviously 1A, 1B, of course, but it was cool to see Leah and Haley and AK and others get their opportunity. I mentioned the plane situation. How quickly does that put things into perspective? I mean, you want to talk about life slapping you in the face. Just take me through that experience, if you don't mind, now that you've had a chance to reflect. And I saw that when I woke up the next morning, and I'm going, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, it is. It's something. I mean, you end the season that way and a special year that we had this year. And just, you don't want to say goodbye to your team. You don't want it to end. And, you know, we were all kind of in that moment when we got on the plane, because it was a quick turnaround. I mean, after, you know, we lost, we did media, we got back to the hotel, we showered, we ate, and we got on the bus to get on the plane. And then, you know, you start hitting a couple bumps, and then, you know, the mask come down, the oxygen mask come down, and then they tell you to put the oxygen mask on. And, you know, then your ears are hurting and you're in a lot of pain at that moment. And you start, you know, things start going through your mind really quickly. And it's another reminder, as this whole year has really been, of, you know, telling people that you're close to how you feel about them and telling your loved ones that you love them and enjoying, you know, each moment you have, just a constant reminder that anything could be taken away at any second. And that was kind of our theme going into this year, with the NCAA being taken from us last year and with COVID hitting and losing so much of this past year. It's try to embrace every moment and control what you can control. And in those moments, we didn't have control. And, you know, I just started praying and, you know, thinking about every player behind me, thinking about my family at home. And just a reminder, when you touch down on that ground again, you know, we said, you know, just call your families right away and just connect. And I think this whole year has kind of been like that. And if that's anything that we've learned through this year, You know, basketball is a game. And I know we all want to win, and I want to win a championship. And, you know, I'm built for that. I'm driven for that. And so are the players in our program. But really, it's relationships are the most important thing. And family is the most important thing. And to me, my family is obviously my children and my husband and my parents and all that. But it's really my Michigan family as well. And just in those moments, you know, just keep your people close and spend time with your people and tell them you love them and give them a hug. And that was just another reminder in a tough day, you know, another reminder how, you know, blessed and fortunate we truly are.
Lastly, I know you're going to think a whole lot about this season when you're done and retired and sitting, relaxing and enjoying everything, but the work doesn't stop here. Toyel Wilson heading to SMU as the head coach, a great opportunity for her. Between that and recruiting and player development and having conversations, what does Kim Barnes-Rico's schedule look like right now? Because you'd think, oh, well, the season's over. You know, maybe she's relaxing a little bit, but I know that's most certainly not the case.
Yeah. Well, a couple things. First, you know, our administration, Elizabeth Heinrich, made the trip with us. So she got to spend all that time in the bubble with us. And, you know, when we finally landed, you know, the next day at home, you know, she said, I hope you get a few days. And I'm like, well, you know, that I wish, but I will. I certainly will. But, you know, right when you get home, there's so many things to do before you can kind of close the book on or close the chapter on, you know, this season and move on to the next one. And one is figuring out your players and making sure that they're in a good space and having some conversations with them. And then next is your staff. And I think, you know, one of the things that I've learned doing this as a head coach over 20 years is that, you know, the goal of most assistant coaches is to become head coaches and to learn from different people. You know, most of them move on for head coaching, but sometimes they move on for assistant coaching stops to just get a different voice and to learn from somebody different. And sometimes early on in my career, that was, it pains you because you lose good people. But I've been fortunate to coach, to work with some amazing assistants that have moved on. And Toyel, you know, recently got a head coaching job, and that's just a tremendous, tremendous accomplishment for her. So yeah, I'm juggling, you know, the transfer portal is crazy, making sure our kids here are crazy. When are we going to start workouts? Making sure our schedule is ready for next year. Making sure that we have assistant coaches, taking care of all that logistical stuff. So that way, you know, maybe at some point I could put my feet up. But I have had, just when I thought the stress of our season was over, my freshman daughter's team has made it to the Final Four in the state. And, you know, we were away for that 11 days. And it was the first time in my coaching career out of all the NCAA tournaments I've ever been at that my family hasn't been with me. And for a couple of reasons. One was obviously the bubble, and they couldn't come in without testing 11 days before. And two, because one, my boy's a freshman in college, so he's away at school and practicing. And my daughter's, my youngest one, had her state gymnastics meet, which she came in first place in the vault and second place in the beam. During the weekend that we were playing. And then third, my freshman daughter, who plays at Detroit Country Day, was playing in the regional finals. She won the districts and they won the regional while I was away. But I'm home and I've had an opportunity to watch her play. I think it's her last three games. So she moves on to the semifinals tomorrow. So last night I had my fill of additional stress when I thought the season was over. I was coaching from the stands, which I know I'm really probably not supposed to be doing, but it's very stressful when you're a mom, maybe even more stressful than when you're coaching your own team. But that's a highlight that I was able to be there for that. And then she plays tomorrow and that I'll be able to be there for that. So sometimes you miss things in this profession with your children, and they missed the Sweet 16, which was a bummer because I really wish that I had them with me. But getting home in time to see her make her Sweet 16 run has been really special.
Awesome stuff. Good luck moving forward to her and to her team. As you know, it's tough to survive in advance. So I'm glad to hear that that's happening. And Coach, I appreciate you taking some time out. Again, I know it is a busy time. We'll check in throughout the offseason, but no, in all seriousness, what a season, what a run. And the cool thing is this program keeps taking steps forward. You're just raising the bar, and this was a big step forward. There's no doubt about that.
Thank you so much, Brian, and I appreciate all the support you've given us through the year. And you know, our goal is always to make Michigan proud, and hopefully this season we were able to do that. So thanks.
No doubt.
And go Blue.
The margin is so thin in this tournament, in this event. You get 40 minutes, and if you play well, you get another 40 minutes. And Michigan didn't play well in this 40 minutes, and that's the first time in a long time, and one of very few times all season that happened, and it caught up to them against a team that, I mean, they outgritted Michigan in a lot of ways in this one.
They did. And anytime you play in a game that's a knockdown, drag out type game, you've got to make everything count. You know, you can't leave things on the line. You know, Michigan left something there on the line. You know, you got to step up and make your free throws. And I'm quite sure with these players, a lot of things are going to go through their minds of maybe a layup I missed or maybe something I could have done. That's why you kind of want to let it all hang out and let it leave everything out there on the line. And Coach Howard always talked about emptying your gas tank. You know, this team had a lot of resolve, you know, getting down, fighting back, getting in the ball game. But just, in my opinion, just a lot of close range layups missed, bobbled, or whatever you want to call it, and then leaving it on the line. Because you look at these statistics here, and Michigan pretty much probably beat them in every category.
Except for the final score. And that's what matters most. And Michigan missed its final eight shots from the floor. Wolverines had those back-to-back layups on the left block for Dickinson on a post-up and Smith on a transition take. Franz Wagner missed an air ball three with 11 seconds left. Eli Brooks got that offensive board, and then he couldn't have a reverse layup. Mike Smith misses the three. Franz Wagner at the buzzer. I mean, Michigan had chances and chances and chances. Just felt like a lid was on the basket.
Yeah, you got to relish those opportunities that you have and make sure that, you know, you get something out of them. You know, whether it's a foul, getting to the free throw line, you know, but Michigan has nothing to hang their head about. I mean, this was a season that I enjoy calling. I enjoy watching these guys get better. And, you know, you just, you know, lost to a team. You gutted it out. You gritted it out, but you came up short.
Michigan falls to UCLA 51-49 here in this East Regional Final. And you look at those turnovers. Michigan commits 14, leading to 14 points off the turnovers. That's, other than the score, that's the only other category that Michigan lost in this game. They won pretty much everything else or came even. But those will catch up to you. They don't get magnified because they don't come down the stretch. But Michigan, if you don't cough those up, things play out differently down the stretch when you can't find a bucket.
Exactly. I mean, you've got to take care of value that basketball. And at this time of the year, and you've watched games, you know, boil down where teams did not take care of that basketball. And, you know, it'll come back and haunt you. Free throws will come back and haunt you in this time of the season. And Michigan just didn't do a good job of taking care of that basketball.
Gut-wrenching loss for the Maize and Blue. UCLA outlasts the Wolverines 51-49 here in this East Regional Final. Brian Bush, Terry Mills, Tony Butler, Rob Joyce. And, you know, Terry, you think about the season. It's so tough and it's so sudden in situations like this because you're rolling, you're winning, you're having fun. And then 40 minutes can come and go and your season's over, the quest is done, and you're seeing another team celebrate. But this Michigan ball club finishes 23-5. They win the Big Ten regular season championship. They get to the Elite Eight. It hurts now. But all things considered, just when you consider the basketball aspect of this, there's a lot to be proud of.
Yes, it is, and I'm proud of this team. I thought this team came out and they fought to the end. They fought through adversity. They never made excuses. You know, Isaiah Livers goes down, and everyone pretty much counted this team out. Hey, you can't beat this team. You can't beat that team. But Michigan just found a way to kind of gut it out and kept competing. And like I say, tough loss, tough two-point loss here, but, I mean, a lot that they can build on. I'm very proud of this team.
And then when you consider everything else that went on, the pandemic, this team did everything it was supposed to do. They wore their masks. They socially distanced.
they stayed away from the normal college life, which, I mean, we were both in college. College is an addicting experience. You want to have that fun. Even if you are a student athlete, you want to go out and have a good time. And they listened to everything. The only time they had to pause was because of a department-wide pause that did not have any positives for either basketball program. For them to do that the way that they did and uphold that, they could have gone winless the season, and that still was a success. To consider all of that plus the wins that they got, it's remarkable.
Yeah, and the way that they even fought when they came off the pause, you know, and, you know, you heard people say, well, what would have happened if they hadn't went through the pause, and because they were playing such good basketball. But, you know, hey, I thought what they did was unbelievable. You know, I tip my cap to these young men because of, you know, what they've had to go through, you know, and during the pandemic, and just do everything the right way and being in a bubble, and it's just unbelievable. But, you know, you don't win them all. But like I said, I'm proud of this group, and I'm proud to say I'm a Michigan Wolverine.
Yeah, as am I. And, you know, Juwan Howard, you think, I mean, this was his first chance at the NCAA tournament. I know this will motivate him. This will motivate everybody in this program. And, I mean, if there was any doubt a little bit less than 2 years ago if Juwan Howard was the man for the job, there is none now. What he's done, this is far ahead of schedule. And based on the recruiting he's done, the relationships he's built, you never know on these things. But if Michigan's never back at this stage, I'd be stunned. I think they've got a great chance to be here next year and every season moving forward with that man at the helm.
Yeah, no doubt. He's the right man for the job, and it's not going to surprise me to see us back here again, you know, competing for a national championship real soon. Relentless worker. Doesn't surprise me if he doesn't break down this film, if he's not on the phone talking to his recruits, doing whatever he needs to do, because he understands what kind of job this is, and he's up for the task.
It'll be an interesting offseason. Of course, the transfer portal is loaded. Michigan has a ton of seniors who technically can come back, but you know, a lot of them probably will not. There will be some roster shuffling. Michigan will bring in six highly touted recruits, three McDonald's All-Americans. So this team will look really different. I think that's what hurts most of all, is that this team was so special. And yes, there will be other great players that come through. Guys from this team will return. But this team was really special. And what they did, it just hurts, because that was not the ending I don't think any of us expected.
No, we didn't expect that by no means. But, you know, you talk about how different this team is going to look next year. It will look different. And, you know, some of these guys have got to go on with their lives. You can't play this game forever. You know, you can't stay in college forever. And it's good what the NCAA did and allowed these guys to be able to transfer. And this year doesn't count. But I tell you what, that number is up extremely high in the transfer portal. So, you know, you got to look out for that. But, you know, as young men, you've got to say, hey, what do I want to do with the rest of my life?
Appreciate you. Thank you for all you did this season. This was as unique of an experience as I've ever had in broadcasting. 2020 into 2021 has been one of the most unique times of any of our lives. But I appreciate your friendship, your work on the air, and what you are for Michigan and for this program.
Well, I appreciate it, Brian, and I enjoy working with you, and can't wait the next season, man.
Again, that was mere minutes after Michigan fell to UCLA in men's basketball in the Elite Eight. Wanted to share that with you because, again, we've done that all season long on our post-game podcasts. Still holds up a week later, even if it doesn't sting any less because of the narrow loss, and knowing then what UCLA did against Gonzaga a few days later. But Terry Mills, the best Michigan basketball representative you can have. I am so blessed to be able to work with him on the air. And I've said this, what makes Michigan special in terms of broadcasting, there are national champions on both the football and the men's basketball broadcasts. John Jansen, 1997. Terry Mills, 1989. That is so rare in broadcast because, A, you've got to have a school and an athletic department that's good enough to win a championship in both those big-time sports. And then you have to have guys who want to come back, who want to be a part of this. And I don't know of anyone who cares more deeply about Michigan and the team that they played for, the program they were in, as John and Terry. So these are two guys who, you know, this was a unique setup this season, of course. We did everything we could to try to bring you these games, even though we weren't at the road sites. We weren't at the Big Ten of the NCAA tournament. And it starts with those two guys and the rest of our team to be able to realize, hey, this is going to be a grind. This is going to be different. This is not what you're used to. But we need to put on a good show. And to have those two, everyone else on the football broadcast, and then our engineer, Tony Butler, who is tremendous. I can't say enough about what he means to our broadcast. He's been doing this for a long time, and he cares about this program and about those broadcasts more than anyone I know. I'm really thankful to have a great team to work with. Again, we told you off the top, send us a note, shoot us an email, MichiganWolverinesRadio@gmail.com. Would love to get your thoughts, your hopes for who you'd like to hear from during the offseason in basketball. The goal, the plan is to have 3 podcasts a week here on MGO Blue Podcasts. Tuesdays, Conquering Heroes. Wednesdays, Defend the Block. Thursdays, In the Trenches. There will be some times where we won't have a certain episode. We might take a week off or so as we get into a little bit of a quieter time, but still plenty to discuss, and we will do that here on Defend the Block. So thanks to you for tuning in. Thanks to everyone who helped make these broadcasts and these interviews possible. Sarah Van Meter, Tom Weirot, of course, the national champ, Terry Mills. I'm Brian Bush. Thank you so much for listening. Lots to come here for Defend the Block. Go Blue.
Thanks for listening to today's edition of Defend the Block, part of our Michigan Athletics Podcast Network, MGO Blue Podcasts. The preceding is a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.